But I thought what I'd do, we've got a tape from Mr. Armstrong today. It's a tape which was of a sermon that he gave in December 81, around Christmas time. And he's talking about what is sin. Particularly, he goes into makeup to some degree, but he's talking about, you know, what sin actually is. And I thought it would be a worthwhile tape to actually listen to. So we'll have that for the main message today. And what I thought I'd do is simply just give you an update of the trip that we've recently had across to the United States and Canada, and just give you almost a blow-by-blow account, or day-by-day account of what took place. It was very profitable. Certainly we saw some people we'd never seen before, a number of them, and were in contact with others even by phone, which we, people we'd never actually seen before, and they probably are actually listening to me as I speak. But we went from, let's see, I jotted down a few notes as to the various days, but on the Wednesday we left from Heathrow, and we got away on time and everything was working fine. We went to Washington, and I think it's the first time we'd actually flown via Washington. I can't remember having seen Washington before, but it was interesting. There's a number of fountains and everything else in Washington which I'd never seen before. You see the fountains in various pictures around the White House, but there's fountains all over the place, they looked like, as you flew in. And in Washington we ran for the plane because the actual connection, we were a little bit late getting in, and it was a real touch and go as to whether we'd actually get there or not. And then we finally got onto the plane to Toronto. The plane was very small, and therefore even my laptop computer wouldn't fit in the overhead luggage compartment, and it was like that, and so that all had to go into the hold. And you know, you have your heart in your mouth, because if that laptop goes astray, then that's it for transmission. I mean, you can't transmit. Also the other luggage, which was a microphone and all the other bits and pieces, that also all had to go into the luggage into the hold, because they couldn't get it in the overhead lockers. And then we sat on the runway for over an hour because they dug up one of the runways. At least it wasn't like I heard the case in Ghana or one of the West African countries where they literally came screaming up down the runway to actually take off, and then jammed on their brakes because somebody dug up the runway and nobody told anybody about it. It didn't quite happen like that, but we did sit on the runway for over an hour on the tarmac, waiting to take off. So when we got to the other end, Mr. Pippi was to meet us, and I did not know what he looked like. He reckoned he knew what I looked like, or what we looked like. So we got to to Toronto, and we looked around for anybody that looked like John Pippi, who we don't really know what he looked like, and nobody looked familiar at all, and nobody was there. And so I went to a phone, and I did have his mobile number, fortunately, and gave him a ring. And he answered, and he said, "Where are you?" I said, "You're going to be joking. Where am I? I'm kind of looking out, and there's a flyover, and there's a bank of phones." And I started describing this, and I started looking around, and this man comes wandering up with his mobile on his ear. And that's how we actually met. So it was quite an interesting meeting anyway, and we got on supremely well with both John and Eileen Pippi. I mean, again, it was just like old friends. I mean, we chatted on the chat room, and I'd talked to him on the phone previously, but it's as if we'd known each other all our lives virtually, which is the way it should be when two people or a number of people get together with God's Spirit. That's the way it ought to be. We stayed with the Pippis then that night, and on Thursday it was a case of just getting to know them. It's a case of just talking, and we did nothing but talk, and rather than just sit in the house and talk, we also got in the car then and talked. We went across to Niagara, which is just about an hour or so away. It was an opportunity to actually see Niagara Falls. It was very misty. It was, you know, you couldn't see perhaps as clearly as perhaps we'd like. But it was fine. I mean, it is a spectacular sight. I mean, you can get within about 15 feet of the top of Niagara and you can see the water as it goes over. It's moving at about 20 miles an hour below you, and maybe 8 feet away, and then about 15 feet, it literally disappears 175 feet over the top. And you can see this kind of wadge of water, which is about 3 feet 3 foot 6 deep. It's kind of green because you can see the light going through it as it goes over the edge, and this disappears down the bottom. And the only, you're free to go and stand at that location. The only thing we paid for was to go underneath the waterfall itself. I thought that would be worthwhile doing. We could see the kind of boat kind of going across it up to the waterfall and then kind of going back down again. It was pretty misty and we didn't do that. But we went underneath the waterfall. There's tunnels that people had dug, and then dug out to the waterfall, and you can see this water thundering past. I think the most spectacular of that was actually at the side. So you're about 150 feet down the waterfall when the water's actually coming past you, and you wear these kind of plastic capes, I suppose, the little thin plastic cape things, just because the spray is going everywhere. So it was quite a... It's just the... When you read Rivers of Living Water, it's a totally different meaning. It's not, Rivers of Living Water is not just a nice tranquil thing. It is something with enormous power, and the power of Niagara is just phenomenal. And certainly that was a high point. But it gave us the chance to get out of the car and just talk, which we did. And then on the Friday, we travelled with them across to the Evanses, and the Evanses live out in the countryside. The Pippies live in a condominium, isn't it? So what we would call like a flat within this the city of Toronto. But the Evanses live right out in the countryside, and we were able to get to see people that we'd seen before back down in Florida. We saw the Blackwoods. That's Elisa, who is Bob and Debbie Evans's daughter, and Matthew, her husband, and the Spellmans, as well as Shyla, Matea, and Jaden, their children. We also met Becky, who is a daughter that we hadn't seen, who was there, and obviously Debbie's sister Darlena and her children Drake and Mackenzie, and we were able to just relax at the Evanses. It's, as I say, out in the countryside. It's just a few miles from where Bob Evans actually grew up. He had a farm out there. His father had a farm, and it's very, very pleasant. Very, very pleasant countryside. It's a bit cooler than here, a lot cooler than California, but it is, it wasn't snow or anything like that. You think of Canada, you think of snow, and apparently the area does get quite a bit of snow. But the thing that really I found most interesting, but they wouldn't let us go down initially, was their basement. They're probably listening to me now thinking, hey, they're all laughing. But what exactly they were hiding down the basement, I'm not quite sure, but they said, that's a no-go zone. So apparently there are bodies down there of various people just sleeping, I think. So, they managed to fit everybody in by utilising the basement, which really ran under the entirety of the house. I think it's a phenomenally good idea. Why on earth we don't have it over here? In fact, I think the planning departments need to have some instructions from the Canadians. On the Sabbath, we had Jerry Haig then come over to spend the Sabbath with us, and her daughter Linda, and a couple of local ladies as well attended with us, and you probably logged in at that time. On the Sunday, we had a couple, a minister and his wife, Don and Alice Roth, who are of a Church of God. I'm not sure what I think that's all they call themselves, basically. They have driven for 2 days from, I think, Wisconsin to actually come and spend a bit of time with us. So it was interesting talking to them on the Sunday. We spent some time. We had to break off just shortly after midday because I had another meeting again on the Sunday with our mystery guest, somebody that we had been in contact with for over a year, it's around about a year, I suppose it must have been, and I didn't know their surname. They'd got in contact with me over the internet, and I didn't know who I was looking for. Again, another one where you go into a place. I'd arranged a place to meet them, and we went, and I looked around, couldn't see anybody. I saw one person sitting down in the corner with a kind of starry eye and his eyed look on his face, and I thought, well, if he's the one that's supposed to come and meet, I'll wait until they contact us. I'm not going to go to contact him. But fortunately it wasn't. some old tramp, I think it was, just come in for a cup of coffee. But this couple and a granddaughter drew up smack on time, and from the word go, again, it was very evident that we were of one mind and talking the same language, and it was just a delightful meeting. 2 hours went by without any problem at all. Mr. Bob Evans had actually run us down there. Again, Judy didn't feel quite up to me driving at that time, though she did later. And I then said, well, give us another hour, and so we again talked for another hour, so that's 3 hours, and they then decided to come back with us to the Evans' house, and things worked out. I won't go into details, but certain things worked out in that meeting where God's hand was stamped all over it. I mean, all over that meeting, and it was it's something that I think of the trip stands out in our mind as a high point, because we could see God's hand in it. There's no question in my mind the way certain things transpired, and that was most encouraging. They stayed then right the way through. I don't know what time we got away, about 10 o'clock, about 4 hours later, you know, back at Bob and Debbie's place, and it was, you know, the Pippies came round, and it was again a delightful evening. Just talking. I mean, we did nothing but talk most of the time, so it was excellent. You know what the feast is like? Well, that's what it was like in many ways. But these are, as I say, the people who knew, people we have not met before, had no real knowledge of at all, completely new. On the Monday, Don Alice Roth came round again, and we spent a great deal of time again discussing various issues. There's a group that they have with them. Whether they will actually meet with Mr. Berkey for the feast is not certain yet. It's still up in the air. We'll see what happens there. I think probably not, but probably they'll download certain of the messages that will come out from Derbyshire, from over here. So that is one aspect. On the Tuesday, we went back to the Pippies because we were going to be flying out early on the Wednesday morning. Oh yes, beforehand we actually got a guided tour of the basement as well. I think Debbie finally said, okay, you can go down and see it. But as I say, it was a really, as far as the idea of a basement, I've always been taken with the idea, and having actually seen one, and I think this was the first one I'd actually seen, it was something that I'm thoroughly in favour of them, if in my kingdom. It won't be my kingdom, but in my aspect of the kingdom. We then flew out on the Wednesday morning early, and we got, let's see, it was about 1.5 hours. Yeah, we flew out to Oregon, but the flight was delayed. I mean, this happens all the time. You know, the idea of that travelling is fun is a load of nonsense. It's delayed flights and missed connections, and fortunately we hadn't got any missed connections, but this particular one, it was 1.5 hour late, and it was a different flight number. So we got to the other end, and there was no Mr. Berkey there to meet us. It was the case, you know, you wander around, you finally collect your luggage, nobody's there, so you go off looking and seeing various areas that he might be, and trying to determine where you can make a message to get a message out. I didn't have his mobile at all. We had his telephone number at home, but that's about an hour or more away. Fortunately, he did in fact find us, and I came back to the luggage area, and he was there with Judy. So that was Wednesday, and then Thursday I managed to go and see my brother and his wife in Lebanon, and this is where Judy very courageously took her heart into her mouth, and I drove for about an hour and a half, something like that, through the various towns. It's my brother said to me, it's not the fact of when you first get into a car on the other side of the road. It's the fact when you've been there for a couple of weeks and you get confident that you suddenly let your guard down. And he said that he finally admitted that he was driving my car when he was over here for several weeks, and he ended up coming out of a junction and going almost straight into the path of an articulated truck. And he said it scared the pants off him. And I told this to my son Robin, and he says, "Oh, that happened to me as well." I said, "Yeah, but it was my car as well." And he said, "Yes, it was." So he did this exactly the same thing. I remember Sylvia, actually, when she came over, did exactly the same thing coming out from our area. It's where you actually come, you come out of a junction, and you're not concentrating. Believe me, it was a case of concentration at all times as to on the right side of the road. So on the Friday I basically spent time preparing the sermon for the following day, for the Sabbath. We were able to meet Mrs. Berkey, which we hadn't met before, and it was good to be able to see everybody there in the home territory. Oregon is an absolutely beautiful garden state. I mean, if you're not driving through vineyards, you're driving through cherry orchards or garden centres. It is just a garden state. It really is. It's a really beautiful area, and you've got these huge mountains in the background. One of which is St. Helens, which has its top blown off. Mount Hood, when we actually flew in, you'd see Mount Hood, and that goes up to over 11,000 feet. So all day on the Sabbath, we started about 10 o'clock. The service actually was 11 in the morning, and carried on talking through to 9:30 at night. We finally said, "Look, enough's enough, we've got to go to bed." So we went to bed at 9:30, and they carried on talking, and there's a kind of barbecue area. Mr. Berkey has a house, and then a few yards away is like a large barn, on the side of which is a church building. And it is a custom-made church building that he's built on the side of this barn close by his house, basically because people would go ahead and talk till midnight and beyond in the house, and it was disrupting, you know, home life. So they built this on the side of the barn, and they just built a barbecue area and a kind of like a garden area further on the other side, and that was used. It was again another glorious day, a beautiful day. In fact, the weather was very kind to it all the way through. We talked till about 9:30, and the left people talking then until about 1 o'clock in the morning. They carried on talking, and people that had come down. So that was all Sabbath. On Sunday, Mr. Berkey took us to actually see Mount Hood and see a little bit of the area, and that's again the only sightseeing as such we did in Oregon. I suppose we went to see my brother as well, but we got up to about 6,500 feet, 6,000 something odd feet, which was the snow line, which is the area where the tree line, trees stop, and you just have raw rock and snow. And they were still snowboarding down the side of this was June, late June, and there's still snowboarders coming right the way down to where we stopped and parked the car. So that was on the Sunday. In the evening, there's somebody who asked to see me, and I was able to get together with them, and certain counselling was needed. So it wasn't, when I say talking, it's not just talking, there's various counselling and various things like this. Monday again, there's certain things that needed to be sorted out, and in the evening we went across to Melina Wallace, who you all remember, who came over the feast here, and we stayed overnight with Melina, who was nearer to the airport over at Portland. And we then on Tuesday morning went to Portland and flew out of Portland and got down to San Francisco on the Tuesday. Wednesday and Thursday we seemed to spend most of our day in the bank trying to sort out certain banking details. We couldn't do it all on the Wednesday, so we had to go back on the Thursday again to get certain things signed and various bits and pieces. The other thing that happened during the time when we were away in Oregon was that Mr. Plagenza had this head injury, which was, could have been really serious. I said to him later, when we were coming down to, from Oregon down to San Francisco, I wondered when I heard about this whether I'd be conducting a funeral, because it could have been that serious, but it wasn't. Thankfully, prayers went out on his behalf, and he seems fine. He gets a bit tired, but he, looking at the place that he fell from and the concrete that he fell onto, the remarkable thing was he fell off the roof. He was putting apricots or something on the roof to dry, and he fell off onto the concrete, and he then went and got some more apricots and went up and put them, carried on doing it, and never really, just completely the memory of falling and everything else, and he'd been on the ground I think for about 45 minutes or something, was completely gone. He'd lost his that part of his memory. So when his wife came out, Pam came out and said, what on earth are you doing? And he says, well, I'm drying apricots. He kept on going up on the roof. And he came down, he says, what's this on the ground? It was blood from his head. He says, it's your blood, so he washed it away. And the knock on his head did have an effect. It was not something that is... was just minor. It could have been quite major. But as I say, in the bank, the other thing that I noticed, and going through airports, you do tend to see a cosmopolitan group of people, but in the bank also, within Merced, the number of people who were not Israelite was quite remarkable. Now, I know that America is a melting pot, and it is, this is the sign language for America, which is the kind of shaking of a pot. But it hasn't always been like this. And as I say, in Merced, which is right in the kind of heartland of California, within the very bank, just watching people coming through, there were very, very few Israelite. And America is being taken over from the inside. Britain is being taken over from the inside. It's exactly what happened to ancient Rome. Ancient Rome, the Romans today, Italians today, are not the Romans. No, this is what happened with ancient Rome. And we need to be aware of this, that internally, the nations are changing. They are being changed from the inside. It says grey hairs are here and there upon him, and they don't know. And you can see this, and certainly just sitting in the bank, whether we sat in that bank for hours waiting to see various people. And it is interesting just watching the people going past. And as I say, as you go through airports particularly, you see this. Friday I tried to prepare my sermon. Sabbath, there was a 7 a.m. service, which was a novel thing to have. But at least that gave you the opportunity to listen at 3 o'clock over here. We met some people afterwards that we were wanting to meet with us. We were able to have lunch with them. And then Sunday, we saw the Americans at play, July the 4th. Now, we brought our British flags and we we've decided not to go ahead and cause a stir. But it was interesting. I was talking to Adele just before the service about the Saudi Arabian cows that she heard about. That apparently in Saudi Arabia now there are about 400,000 cows, cow herds, or a herd of cows, about 400,000 strong. And the only way they can survive in the desert heat is by having sprays to keep them cool. Well, that's about how I felt in this particular July the 4th party. It was about 98 degrees plus the barbecue, and periodically I would go under the kind of spray that they had arranged to try and cool off, and then stand in a draft, and that's about the only way I could survive. Now, very kindly, I mean, Abby Castaneda, have you lost it? But Abby was saw my disquiet, and the next thing I knew was a cup of iced water was put down the back of my neck. So, and I knew it was iced water. That a bit later, about 20 minutes later, I couldn't understand why it was so cold down the back. And of course, the ice was all collected in the back of a t-shirt. Mm-hmm. So, anyway. Then it was back to, we managed to go down to Monterey. Again, it was partly to catch some sleep before we took off, because we knew that the flight back, which was the polar route, we'd done that before, and you just don't get sleep at all on the, hardly at all on the flight back. We're all crammed together in cattle class, so we managed to get a decent night on the Monday night in Monterey. Back to the UK on Tuesday, as I say, we got maybe at the outside it would be about 2 hours sleep, and then we got in the UK and it was probably the worst weather they've had in the summertime for about, on the Wednesday, for about 500 years, I think it was on the weather forecast. But there was storms and gales and everything else, and coming in on the aeroplane, I was rather apprehensive because it was a lady pilot. But no, she did very well. She landed it very well. Considering the conditions, it was quite a decent landing. And then the actual trip back, probably because of this problem with the weather, there might have been some high-sided vehicles blown over on the motorway, but the motorway was closed coming home. So we had to go back up to the A40 and down that way, having spent between 1.5, 2 hours on the motorway in traffic jams. I mean, it was just... The journey back was not particularly brilliant from Heathrow. It took us as long to go from the plane at Heathrow home as it did to go from San Francisco to Heathrow. It was ridiculous. But there's the joys of travelling. So it is interesting. I mean, I put a couple of scriptures down regarding Paul's travels, but I'll leave it. I'll leave it. I won't go ahead and read the scriptures. We'll go on into the Bible study proper with Mr. Armstrong, I think. But it was a profitable trip. We do really appreciate people's prayers when we are travelling like this. They are much needed. So many things can go wrong. Certainly when we go down to West Africa, please be remembering us. We're going down in a month's time now. And in that area, although we're not going to be journeying as much as we did last time, we're going to be flying into Port Harcourt this time, so we don't have to journey across from Lagos. We still have to go from Port Harcourt up to Owerri, and there are going to be people coming down from Benin City across to see us. And again, it is a hazardous. There are some hazardous journeys, so please be remembering your brethren down there, and the trip down there as well. So that's the next one. I mean, the next thing we've got is a birth of another grandchild within another couple of weeks or so, and then we've got the trip in about a month's time down to Africa. And then it's a preparation for the feast. So that's the way things go. Right, we'll go on to the main message today, which will be given by Mr. Armstrong. As I say, it was a sermon given back in 1981 about what is sin.